You're listening to the Friends Electric Podcast, Episode 2, The Many Faces of HTML5. For past and future episodes of this podcast, go to friendselectric.com. Good evening. You're listening to the Friends Electric Podcast, a podcast by webby, geeky, designy people for like-minded people. With me, as always, is your co-host and my co-host and everyone's favorite co-host, Senor Peter Woolley.
Hello.
Yes, Peter of course, of McAfee. And the voice you're hearing right now, Babylon, is Tyler Sticka. I'm a designer at Wagner Edstrom Studio D. And this is the second episode, which means that we are officially a series. You can't have a sequence of one unless you're really anal about your unordered lists in HTML. So I guess this thing's official now, huh? We're actually doing it.
Yeah, it's real, man. Real. Yeah.
And people commented on the first episode, which means that someone allegedly listened, or at least thought about listening, and read enough about it to... You know, I don't really mind if you really listen to it or if you just pretend to and leave a comment to make me feel better. It's all the same ego massage for me, so...
Yep, I agree, 100%.
I encourage either. So, last week we talked about HTML5 versus Apple versus Flash, and we got some really good points discussed regarding Steve Jobs' points and then the developer Joe Hewitt's points and all of that fun stuff. And we really got into sort of the nature of... You know, is HTML5 even a viable platform? And I think the conclusion we arrived to is, yeah, of course it is, because it's HTML and it's the next version and everyone's implementing it and this thing's going to happen. So this week, what we want to talk about is really what the opportunities are there. And I know Peter and I both have that same professional and hobbyist interest that I think a lot of our colleagues have. We both... like tinkering with new stuff. Just before this call, I was playing a lot with WebKit CSS3 animations and things of that sort, and I know that we both dig that, but we're also both instructors at the Art Institute of Portland. And Peter, what classes are you teaching at Art Institute right now?
Just this term, I'm just teaching the actual first JavaScript class, the web scripting JavaScript, and then next term I'll be teaching advanced scripting, which is like basically the fourth JavaScript class, the end-all, be-all JavaScript class.
Very cool. So if they don't know their stuff by the end of that class, then they probably are out of luck.
It's probably a bad thing. I mean, I guess at that point they should just blame me. But I've taught it now twice, and the results out of it, I must say, are pretty impressive. Most of them are pretty impressive.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's my thing. Whenever something goes wrong for me, I just blame you anyway. So
right,
it doesn't
yeah.
matter. Like they're out of this thing at the grocery store. Darn you, Peter!
It's probably my fault. Yep.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, and I'm going to be teaching web standards this summer, so obviously HTML5 is a big one for me. Last year when I taught this class, I devoted, it was either 1 or 2 weeks to HTML5, and this year it might actually end up being half the term devoted to it, because it's just, when I taught it before, it was so much more of a, it was actually kind of depressing. And I don't know if you've had this experience, Peter, when you like kind of show up and coming stuff in a class, but it's like they get excited momentarily, and then when you explain all the limitations and how like 98% of the universe won't ever know that they put this work into it, they got like really like it down about it, actually. And in this term, I'm really excited to go like, hey, look, browser support's come a long way. Here's some like awesome stuff you can do right now. And it's all theoretical.
Definitely bringing up, I'm trying to get people enthusiastic about IE9. Like, I think IE7, obviously a good step forward. IE8, a bigger step as far as web standard is concerned. Not a super clean step, but a big one. And then I think just their focus in IE9 with the... not only the HTML5 stuff and additional CSS 2 and 3 stuff, but all of this discussion that's going on where we might actually see them put in the HTML5 canvas tag. And if they do, I think we can totally attribute it to everybody complaining to them and for them actually listening. And I think that's a great place for Microsoft to put themselves, and I think it's a great place for the browser market.
Oh, absolutely. I mean... what is the web if not like a giant soapbox, basically? And I mean, we can, that's one of the best things about it. We can really harass these browser makers, and it really feels like we're not just arguing about this stuff in a vacuum now. It really feels like they're listening. And at Wagner, I work with Microsoft a lot, and they are listening, and they do hear this stuff, which is cool to see. But so let's talk about, okay, HTML5. It's going to happen. We're getting the browser buy-in and stuff where people are listening and everything. And so the first thing we really want to talk about is, all right, there's a lot of this sort of pontificating about like, hey, let's replace Flash with HTML5. But obviously this isn't a black and white, like, do it overnight sort of affair. Like most things in web, this is going to be a gradual process. As support increases, you're going to be able to introduce things, and it's not going to be a one-to-one. I mean, people shouldn't be expecting a just like, you know, hey, here's the action script tag, just drop it in, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, what sort of capabilities would you explain to, I don't know if necessarily to the person who's moving away from Flash and into HTML5, but what do we have to look forward to? What are some capabilities of these new libraries and everything that people who previously had to use Flash for lack of another choice will be excited about?
So I think, first off, with just talking about HTML5 and as much as it kind of has become like the term Web 2.0, this constant talk of HTML5, I think, gets people excited that they can move away, and it just pushes them more to, you know, libraries that already existed. So, you know, if you want to do like charting stuff, like you can use the Flot charting library that's all in JavaScript. It makes beautiful things, and in that case, it actually has been using the canvas tag and the special IE canvas JavaScript library from Google that will make that actually work in Internet Explorer. Like, that's already available. It's been available for quite a long time, and just bringing it up, I think, is going to push people to actually find non-Flash-based things that had already existed. So they don't even have to do the extra work to find it. It's just there, and they get to take advantage of it. So I think that sort of stuff, the HTML5 video tag is, I think, what everybody really means when they're talking about how it's going to replace Flash. And for the most part, I think that the capabilities there are pretty well established. I mean, you don't have full browser support, but you can create a fallback, so you can use Flash in the stuff that's not supported, or you can use the video tag in what is. And the only trick there is that I think one thing we're missing is the concept of performance. So for a lot of these things, like I was mentioning with doing, I'll say, even simple to more complicated charting stuff, if you use a canvas tag, you're probably not going to notice really like any more taxing on the CPU unless you're doing a ton of animation. But with the video, depending on what you're doing, especially if you're trying to apply some effects to it or do special things, you got to watch that CPU usage, because these things are new. They're definitely not optimized, definitely not as optimized as Flash. Not to say that Flash is cheap or easy or, you know, it definitely requires a lot of CPU. I will say that, but I think that right now the HTML5 video tag still requires a bit more in most situations, and that's coming down and that's getting better. And I think the implementations on like Mobile Safari, as well as Safari on the iPad, is probably better. But those are those are still things you have to pay attention to. So you can't just say, oh, I'm gonna throw away Flash and go for the HTML5 stuff. But I think when we do talk about that, HTML5 in general, that's kind of where we can replace Flash. But
right,
when we get into the more complicated things, that's where I really feel that you really have to take a step back and go, a lot of it is still hype, in my opinion. I'll actually upload a copy of it, and we'll put it in the show notes. I did a small demo of where I just have a very slowly rotating, basically it's a planet with basically a black circle with a few drawings around the outside that spins. It's like a heavily stylized planet for something that I was working on a while ago.
Cool.
And the most shocking thing to me was that when I just drew it, it really didn't take that much time. So I just, I used the HTML5 canvas tag. I just drew the big planet, nice and big, and just plopped it basically in the center of your browser. And when it's just sitting there, didn't take much CPU, it was completely fine. But as soon as I wanted to do a slow animation, so we're talking maybe every 100 milliseconds, it rotates, you know, like a fraction of a degree, so that over time you see it moving, but it's really slow. And the style I was going for, I mean, that's what I was looking for, but I noticed that when I did it, even on my machine, even on, you know, you have, you know, dual-core, quad-core machines, not only do they not get full access to all the cores, but they'll tax out a single core. So I'll be using, you know, 25% on a quad core machine just because I'm spinning this one thing.
Right.
And it's like that just leads me to the idea that we're not quite there yet. And while I really want people to invest heavily in the canvas tag to play with it, and I'm still using it in this game for what I'm doing here, I'm still using it. I just have to, you know, cut myself back. So if I were doing it in Flash, the question would be, you know, should I implement paper vision so I can have 3D stuff? And that'd be
right.
Where I was running into performance issues. But here it's like, I'm drawing 2D and I don't want to tax their system this much. Like, I want somebody to be able to leave this open in a tab.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think that's the places where I think drilling into it, we can see a little more of what we have available to us, as well as see the holes that Flash is still actually, you know, it's still good for this. Now, for people exploring, I think it's a great idea. Obviously, by the time you start playing with something now, if it's going to take you a few months, in a few months, we're going to have browsers that are already running this faster.
Right.
So it's a great time to get in there and play. But if I were going to suggest for, like, enterprise work or any production work that you know you want to get out to a mass market that's not running some huge machine that will only use your application in their one
sure.
browser, it's not a great idea.
Sure, sure. Well, and that makes sense in a lot of ways because, you know, I guess I'm a purist when it comes to HTML, and what excites me the most is when HTML is used to do kind of like pure information transfer and not so much a sort of skeleton for which you can kind of create novel interactions, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And so the things that I'm most excited about in HTML5 are what you just mentioned, the ability to do things like video and audio, because I think it's ridiculous that there's no reliable way to embed that sort of media in a document. It would be like if we were still relying on Flash to display images. I mean, it's a type of media human beings have been you know, consuming for literally decades, and it just needs to be accounted for. And
yeah.
Things like charts, too, because if you've ever tried to make a chart without Flash and with some sort of CSS thing, it always becomes extremely hackish. And even the little, you know, tags that they've thrown us in HTML5, the progress tag and stuff like that, seems to be trying to address that and making sure that, okay, if the purpose of HTML is to get across information pure and simple, you know, taking styling out of the equation and stuff like that, you know, where are the gaps? And I think it's doing a nice job. Where we're probably a little farther from, based on what you're describing, is I guess there is a benefit when you're using tools like Flash and Silverlight to having that sandbox if you're creating something. I'm going to sound like a parrot here, but something mm-hmm. with a novel interface, meaning something mm-hmm. that its goal isn't necessarily to display information. I know it's really broad, and I'm probably going to contradict myself in the course of this, but it's more like an experience in and of itself that isn't needing to I forgot what that one ActionScript demo was back in the day where it was just half black, half white, and when you moved your mouse over the middle of it, it created this like aquatic interface type thing. Or these things that are extremely visual, like a planet rotating. Like, do you think that there's a value there in having that sort of sandbox to isolate those elements separate from the semantic HTML? And do you see Canvas as being that sandbox in the future? Or do you think we're always going to need some sort of layer between, okay, HTML information transfer and, like, you know, tactile, non-semantic experience?
You know, I guess right now, since what we're mostly doing is comparing them, you know, as an apple to an apple, I would think yes that we probably will continue to need something that will be able to separate us. But I guess the argument that I would make is that already Canvas does that. So as it stands now, basically you can draw elements into the canvas. It's a lower level API than the drawing API in Flash, which is actually frustrating to deal with. but even right now, it's like if the performance were there, I do think that it would basically replace that. But in the future, and the spec, that's what's funny about the spec, is it's still being drawn up. But in the future, there will be implementations where you can actually draw HTML elements into the canvas tag, and it will be rendered like basically with your style sheets. I mean, it'll act just like the DOM. So it reminds me more of the way that Silverlight works now, where you can like tunnel into it and access the DOM outside of it, which I think is actually helpful. So I guess right now I would say that we'll need that separation, but Canvas can be that. But then in the future, I think we're going to find that people will start mixing this a lot more. And for good or for ill, we'll see. So if people will have the ability to, you know, drop in a normal quote-unquote web view inside of this extremely like crazy like rotating and like you just move your mouse and it acts like a click and all those crazy things, I'm guessing in that case that'll actually be bad. So we might actually be entering a point where we're gonna start blending these things together, where the fantastic novel interfaces are going to kind of be butting up against the ones that already exist, and who knows, maybe we'll find some great ones and the other ones will just fall by the wayside, I guess, hopefully, or maybe it just won't work out altogether.
That's interesting, and it makes me think a little bit about this problem that a lot of standards-minded designers have of embedded content, despite, you know, it doesn't matter how much HTML-friendly content your site has, if you want to have it be embeddable, you either need to use some extremely hackish thing like an iframe or some big chunky block of exclamation point important CSS stylings ahead of an HTML chunk, or you have to use Flash or something that's in a sandbox. If they put some sort of web view into Canvas, it sounds like that would be an actual viable option where your embed code would now be some sort of canvassing that gets all the stuff built into it. Isolated from the grid.
Yeah, I think in that case we're gonna have to wait for the implementation, because I could see it going either way. I could see that they would kind of treat it as a scoped area where even though you can affect it with CSS by default, like it's not inherited throughout it. Or I could see that people would want that to be inherited throughout. And so I guess the thing that makes me question that the most is the fact that right now I think it's an HTML5. I can't recall the tag, but I know that there's going to be a way where you're able to drop in inline style tags inside, and you can scope them so that the styles will only be applied to the sibling and children tags of that style. And that kind of creeps me out, because I haven't seen an implementation that works. But I mean, right. we're getting lots of implementations, so I think it'll be here at some point. But I could see that would attempt to answer this problem of embedding. But I think with the ability to constantly access the DOM, as the person embedding, you're almost never going to have full confidence that what you're doing is not going to be obscured in some way. Like I know we found out when we were playing with that Comets Convergence site with Google Ads that they have to put inside of their license that you won't attempt to hide it, or you won't attempt to either modify its location using obviously scripting or overlay something on top of it, you know, using a Z-index or something. Like they have to kind of force you to do that, because with JavaScript you can override anything you want, you know, most of the time. Sure. And there's only a couple holy grails there that you can't touch. So there's that.
Right. Absolutely. And us talking about HTML5 as a sandbox might lead us pretty well into this blog post that, is it David Arno?
That's the way that I pronounced it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's David Arno wrote at davidarno.org, and it was this article called HTML5 Must Not Become the Future of the Web, which is a wonderfully blasphemous title. I love that title, because it got me to read it, and it got you to read it, and... Yep. In it, he talks about this, about how JavaScript is inherently flawed because it is delivering source code. And I think what he's saying is just that as long as we're depending on a system that that has delivery of source code, not delivery of bytecode, we're always going to have this browser incompatibility thing going. Is that what basically what he's trying to say, Peter?
That's what I believe he's attempting to say. So he's saying that there's a nice little sandbox that you have with the Flash player, where basically if you're serving up, his argument seems to be that if you're serving up bytecode, then somehow it's a little better, which I love. I think the first commenter actually mentioned, like, well, the issue is that with Flash, you've had ActionScript 1, ActionScript 2, ActionScript 3. And right now, the Flash player is handling all of those. So, you know, it's big, it's slow, and it's because of that. So, like, that argument was, I thought, an interesting way to get for him to get into it. But overall, I thought that one was rather flawed. I think the bigger issue that I saw was, I guess his focus, kind of like we were talking with Joe Hewitt, where it seems to be, this idea that we want to rewrite the web as something new, start over, and saying that, you know, HTML5, that's totally the wrong way. We need to go down to something that takes us back to kind of what the JVM does, or any of those types of technologies where you're able to build on top of it any way that you want to. The delivery mechanism is somehow universal, like if everybody had the Flash player, and instead of opening their browser, they opened up the Flash player, and then they were able to dive around in an HTML-like environment that was more based on links than hypertext. And I guess the trouble there is that a lot of these people are writing things that I have to agree with. Yes, it would be great if we could start over. I do agree with Joe Hewitt. It would be great if we could start over with something that was focused more on web apps than web pages. Like right now, the hypertext link, that's what we're focused on, and now it's what we're trying to get away from. But I honestly think that what we're doing with HTML5 is a step in the right direction, and given its sorted past, and the fact that we're actually moving up to this point, I think it's just an incredible feat that we got here. And right. I very much appreciate everybody, you know, writing these up and really giving clear ideas on what they think the web should be. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think that's helpful. And in the history of the world, we're going to be able to go back and take a look at these things and go, you know, yeah, that might have been a good idea. Or maybe things will slowly come to be. But ultimately, we're not going to be able to move away from what we have now. And HTML5, while only a step, I do think is a step in the right direction.
Certainly, yeah. And I think it's important to, I mean, idealistic discussions are awesome. They're inspiring, they steer change, they get people excited, and they get people talking. But ultimately, and this isn't just in web, this is everywhere, ultimately, they're more guiding lights to what the actual decision will be, because it's never that simple. You know, I know that you and I were actually pretty big fans of a lot of the proposed changes in XHTML2.
Right.
Which, of course, is dead and gone. But I forgot who it was that said, it said XHTML2 is dead, long live XHTML. Because a lot of those principles, although they didn't come through in as pure a form, are carried over somewhat into HTML5. One of the simpler examples being that they went, hey, adding href to any element is a great idea. Unfortunately, we can't do that and maintain backwards compatibility, but you know what? We'll make it okay for you to have block level A tags and still validate. And is that a compromise? Of course it is. Yes, it's a compromise, but it's kind of ridiculous to think that the internet is just going to like cut off people before a certain time. You know, what we love about the internet, it's a two-way street. It's openness and it's ubiquity and it's ease of access. It's a two-way street because on one hand, you have something that is built upon, hey, here's the source. Do with it what you will. That's why standards junkies like you and I, these semantic freaks, get so uptight about make sure the page is semantic, make sure this is human readable, etc. Because you and I get excited about this web page is coming through, and even though my browser is trained to do it in this way, this information is harvestable, and this information is reshuffleable, and that it's just, I'm sure I just made that word up.
Sure.
But that's what's exciting about it. The compromise with that is because we're saying this technology is so freaking open, you can do with it what you will, that means that people are going to make different choices, both from a developer standpoint and from a rendering engine standpoint. And yeah, it's a pain, having standards bodies like W3C is a great sort of they're kind of the traffic police in a lot of ways. Mm. But I do, the more I get into HTML5, as much as I have two parts of my brain, one part that sees how lenient it is in comparison to, I think you and I 95% of the time choose XHTML 1.1 when where most of my colleagues still go with 1.0 transitional, yeah, or 1.0 strict, because I love the hardcore strict markup. So when I'm using HTML5, it still kind of makes the nerd in my brain very angry when I notice that I've omitted a closing, like a self-closing tag, the end slash on like an image, and it still validates. And I'm like, mm-hmm, girl, that's so stupid, though. It has a beginning, it should have an end. But the other part of my brain, the one that is happy for how far rendering engines have come along and how much better they are now than they used to be at detecting when you're using kind of a strict syntax or a much more lenient syntax and everything. I mean, yes, it's a fragmented web, but that also means that it's kind of it's a just and loving web in some ways. And as much as I had a problem with that portion of it, the fact that it is a compromised, I mean, it is a compromised platform. I mean, it just is. You got to get over that initially. But the other side of that, though, is that we have total freedom. We have total carte blanche to detect at the point of, I don't know if you'd call it compiling, but at that point of interpretation of your markup, you can check for features, you can check for all sorts of stuff, and in a way that quite frankly I find more predictable than okay, which beta version of Flash 9 does this person have, and does it support this filter or something? I would rather maybe it's a personality thing, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, but for me, I'd much rather have, you know, my JavaScript checking for the existence of a feature then just rely on, okay, Papa Adobe says it's going to be fine, so I'll just move ahead. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess since I, at this point, haven't done a huge ton of feature checking in ActionScript 3, I would be curious what sort of support there was for that. But ultimately, you are right. Like, when it comes down to it, if someone is using Flash Player 7 or Flash Player, you know, 8 or 9 or 10, if you depend on that and you know that you depend on that, it can be a little frustrating, because what do you have to do? You have to pop up a thing that either does, hopefully it does, an in-browser update, which still is going to take a while, because you have to download it, and then it seems like in Firefox it's always a more annoying process to actually get the update working. But there's that separation, and so for me, I guess as is obvious with my decisions on basically never using Flash these days, is that it's nicer when I can just... When I can get those fallbacks, I guess I can take advantage of progressive enhancement, I suppose, a little better. I think it's a little easier. And once somebody is running, if they're not running JavaScript, that's it. Like, if JavaScript's off, then either you could tell them to turn it back on, or they're just not going to get that experience if you have some sort of rich experience for the JavaScript people and a not-so-rich experience for the people without it. But again, I think we're looking at 1%, which was, I think, the last statistic that I looked at, which is probably even overshooting how many people have JavaScript turned off at this point. But with Flash Player, yeah, you got a few more things to worry about.
Sure, sure. And I think you hit on something big that I think a lot of HTML heads really, really admire, and that is just the opportunity for progressive enhancement. We want to reach the largest audience possible. And I do have to say that we did make a little bit of an error last week when, it was probably just me, but I believe I insinuated, or I may have said outright, that Flash doesn't have multi-touch API or events or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Flash has been... Lee Brimlow on the Flash blog was quick to post a video of a touch-based interface in action, and it's really cool. You can look it up on theflashblog.com. I believe it's called Flash is Not Designed for Touch, with the upward inflection at the end denoting a question mark. But it's cool. I love it. It's a really neat interface. There's lots of touching, and there's lots of spheres and stuff like that, and z-indexes and stuff, and it's very cool. But it still is kind of one of those points of, they're missing the point of, we need that plus the ubiquity of being able to work on an iPad or an iPhone or whatever for our web experiences. You know, saying, okay, yeah, Flash does multi-touch, you know, without this device ubiquity, it's really nothing now. I mean, Apple has said, I guess I'm being unfair, aren't I? I mean, if they, that's a circular argument, because if Apple let them in, then obviously it would be quite relevant. But I don't know. It's, does that change your mind a little bit about the possibilities of Flash on the iPhone? I mean, does that make it any more enticing that we can't have it, or?
I think, well, enticing that we can't have it. I suppose that if the APIs were available, which they're going to be available in Flash Player 10.1, I don't know if at this point, as of this recording, that has shipped or not. But that's, you know, that's basically the latest version, and there's exciting stuff in there. They keep putting great stuff in that. But to answer the question, if that gives me more hope for the iPhone, I think right now, I can't remember who replied this to me on Twitter, but last week, actually I just didn't bring it up, but someone mentioned that if Adobe was able to put Flash on a mobile device and it ran swiftly, which there's been a couple of demos, some that have gone bad and some that have gone well, running on the Nexus One, that would make Steve Jobs kind of, you know, eat his hat. And I just don't think that's the case. I think at this point, Steve Jobs will say, oh, great, so now it's working on one, and then he'll probably take a look at the battery life, he'll probably take a look at the performance and say, you know, this is not the type of experience we want. We want something solid, and this is the beta. That's what it is at this point. So I think in that case, it really doesn't give me any hope. But what it does make me hopeful for, and when I read it, you know, I was happy to see that without just, you know, shooting these things back and forth, like Adobe's new Choices advertisement at adobe.com/choice that was kind of a response to Steve Jobs' thoughts on Flash. And I thought that it's just kind of like flinging poo back at each other. But in this case, even though Lee Brimelow is still mad, I mean, I honestly think that this is his platform, this is his baby, and he wants to fix everything that people are saying that's wrong about it. And so in this case, he's clearing things up. He's letting people know, we have a multi-touch interface. We can do touch. Like, people can make these things and it works. But I think it just goes back to the point that we made last week that, yeah, you support multi-touch, but people have to take, they have to learn these new APIs and they have to take advantage of them. So what are you going to do when you put Flash on the Nexus One? And a lot of these sites or a lot of these, I hate to think about it, but all the advertisements that might pop up, hopefully there will be some sort of ad block developed for Android. When you get those experiences and they just flat out don't work, like, people are still going to have to go back and recompile with these things. They're still going to have to go back and rethink the experience. And so I guess because of that, hopefully, I honestly hope that Flash continues. Maybe it does get out there on the Android stuff. I don't think it's going to be out there on the iPhone OS. But I hope that it does stick around. But what I'm really hoping is that Adobe is talking about how they want to have the best HTML5 canvas support. So they're talking about being able to not only, you know, export to the Flash player and run as a Swift, but actually export out to HTML5 canvas. And I honestly think that's a fantastic idea. It's apparently currently supported in CS5, Flash CS5, but I'm guessing a little hacky, from what I can tell, not the most fantastic thing. But if they're talking about that in public, then I am just excited for where they're going to take this. Because right now, the canvas tag, it's a low-level API. You're using things where, you know, when you draw to the canvas, you're painting pixels. And whereas in Flash, you know, you get these objects, you can say, okay, circle, I want you to go here and move here. But in the canvas, you've got to draw the circle, and then when you want to move it, you've got to clear things out, and you've got to redraw it, you know, a couple pixels over. And so not only does that, is that going to hurt performance, because not everybody is going to do it in the best way possible, but it's going to take people a while. I know that when I was, actually the first time that I taught advanced scripting over at the Art Institute, I had a few students that really wanted to try it out, and what they found was, like, you have to implement so much of the support. Like, if you want click events, you know, you've got to figure out, okay, when someone clicks, what X and Y location are they at? what thing is occupying this space. You don't get the normal stuff that you get in the DOM. You get this low-level stuff. So I think if Adobe wanted to take that on, and man, even if they were able to open up a library so that, say, myself didn't, you know, have to write one and put it out there, then I think they're going to win a lot of hearts and minds of developers at that
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. That would be incredible. And it could also position Adobe in sort of that de facto role of, oh, you're going to write stuff for Canvas? Well, you got to buy Flash CS5. I mean, it just puts every other tool to shame.
That's true.
I mean,
that's true.
Wouldn't that be insane? That yeah. would be so cool.
I mean, yeah, I think we both use Flash really extensively. I think we both started in it like earlier than we did how do I want to say it? We both started in it getting into the animation and that interesting stuff before we got into, like, let's say, JavaScript animation, that sort of stuff. So I think we've both used it. We've seen it grow. It's definitely gotten better. They spend time, you know, attempting to fix the developer. You know, there's this constant, is it for the designer? Is it for the developer? And I think they're doing that better. And if they were continually making these changes and, say, did implement this Canvas stuff, I'd continue buying it and I'd actually install it. I have CS4 right now, but I don't have Flash installed because the number of times I need it is just so low that I'll install it right when I actually need it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking about HTML versus Flash a lot the last two episodes, so I promise to listeners that we will pick a new subject next week unless something amazing comes out for HTML5. But we can't quit this subject without kind of really quick presenting to the listeners what they can take advantage of today and what they may want to either ease into or hold off on. And so I think what I'm hearing is that a lot of the semantic stuff, like new form elements that all degrade to input type text, so they're mm-hmm. really easy to handle for, with a couple styling oddities in Safari, but for the most part they're pretty easy to use. The semantic elements, like, you know, nav and header and footer and section, all of those act oddly is sort of inline tags in a lot of the browsers, but they're very easy to account for. So what's the state? I know earlier you mentioned you should just play with it. So enterprise applications should steer away from this technology right now, correct?
I would say that for what's getting the most press, so you've got HTML audio, HTML5 video, and the HTML5 canvas, that at this point, if you're not already involved in some, like, if you don't currently have Flash involved and you just want to, you know, add a canvas port into it, I would say don't do it. It's probably not worth the time at this point. So yeah, for corporate users, I definitely say that.
Embrace progressive enhancement no matter which HTML5 things you are doing. You will find a browser, even if it's IE6 or IE in general, that will bork on even simple new elements, but there are some great tools out there. You can use Modernizer. I believe it's missing the E, and it's spelt with a Z. is a great JavaScript library that allows you to detect feature support. It also maps to a lot of these APIs Peter and I are talking about, and CSS3 capabilities as well. It's really easy to use, and I would highly recommend it. There are other tools out there if you're using certain CSS3 styles to kind of mimic them and everything. Would you recommend Modernizer 2, Peter? Are there any other assets that people should use? I think that's kind of the de facto one, although I think there's a couple out there.
At this point, I think it is. Like, I would say, though, that if you're going to embrace the CSS3 stuff, you basically have to throw away the idea that you're going to get your style sheet and all your style sheets to be valid. So I think if you're willing to do that, if you don't need all of the stuff that Modernizer has to offer, then just going and looking up, you know, type into Google cross browser and then whatever CSS3 thing you're looking for. And for the most part, you can emulate it in IE6. Like, I know that drop shadows, they're not perfect, but there's I think it's the MS-MS- filter for IE8 and then just the filter. And you can, you know, you can add in these things, and yeah, it's going to invalidate your stuff. But if you want to just go for a pure CSS solution, then I would definitely say that. But, you know, if you're looking for doing a lot and you want to minimize the amount of resources that you take up, then yeah, I think Modernizer is a great one.
Fantastic. So let's talk about Web Visions.
Great.
Well, let's... I don't know how much I'll be able to talk about it because I unfortunately won't be in attendance this year. But I know that you will be. I know it's the first year. I know people might... I've been a speaker there the last 2 years, so I know people are probably going to make the jokes about how, since I'm not getting admission for free this year, I don't show up. But it's really not that. But but it looks like a great lineup, and there are two folks that you and I know personally. We both we went to school. One of our instructors was Tom Wheeler, mm-hmm. who is teaching a class on Drupal, I believe, which I've never been able to drink enough of the Drupal Kool-Aid to really get into it. So I think if you're like me, you need a class on Drupal badly.
Yeah, and I think if you remember I think it was 2 years ago, we sat through a session that was, let's just say, it did not convince us that Drupal was the right way to go. So not to put any pressure on Tom, but I have an expectation. I really want to get what other people are talking about, because I hear a lot of people, when they've worked with both Drupal and WordPress, they can see the place where they would want to use Drupal for more, I hate to use the term CMS, but for CMSs. And I would really like to get in there and figure out, like, you know, what are these modules? You know, how, right. What are these things that are available, and how is the developer experience, you know, differ? How is it that much better? I know that it has more of an object-oriented feel to it, and I'm really excited to see some code. That's what I'm hoping we get to see from Tom.
Absolutely. We have a few other friends presenting there. We've got Amber Case, the Portland's own cyborg anthropologist, who I was excited to see featured in, was it Fast Companies?
Fast Company, yep.
Most influential women in tech, so go Amber. She's a great speaker. You also got Jason Grigsby, who I knew you and I had a very long conversation with him at WordCamp regarding the ubiquity of the iPhone web apps versus iPhone apps. And
indeed,
I think he's always definitely a compelling speaker. I know he was there last year, and I had the unfortunate task of following him, and luckily nothing was thrown, but I heard he blew the roof off the place.
Cool.
And we've also got Cami Chaos is going to be there.
Yeah.
Who's, I just talked to her recently.
Cool.
I don't want to put anyone on the spot or commit her and Dr. Normal, but there may be Friends Electric may in the future be having some sort of guest spot there. We may grace their studio space again, which would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
What sessions? So I'm gonna have to live vicariously through you in attendance. What sessions are there? Any sessions in particular that you can think of off the top of your head that you're excited for?
Yeah, there was another one that actually we both know him, Ryan Russell, over at McAfee. The manager.
Oh, I can't believe I just Ryan, if you're listening, I'm so sorry. You are literally on my little note here. Like, Tom and Ryan are the guys I really know, and I totally skipped over you. I apologize. But yes, Ryan.
Yeah. He's got the design thinking for social change, which I'm pretty excited about. So recently read a book that was actually recommended by him at the design studio at McAfee called Change by Design Tim Brown over at IDEO. And great book, just fantastic stuff in there about the concept of design thinking, basically embracing all of the stuff that you would do in design, but in all the rest of your thinking. And so I'm very interested to see what he has to talk about social change. I know he's got his organization called For the Next, and they looks like they're doing some great stuff, environmental stuff. So I'd really like to see how he, hopefully what I'm hoping to hear from him is how he kind of came to that, and then how he's implemented these concepts of design thinking to take it to where it is now. And I know it continues to grow, and I also know that it's, you know, it's something that he's got, you know, a 40-hour job, but you know, a 40-hour a week job, but he's, you know, doing this in addition. So I'm excited to see how that all takes place.
Yeah, and having worked with Ryan at the design studio, I can say that he's just extremely passionate about this subject. You can tell he's just put his heart and soul into it. So anyone who's interested in that topic and wants to go see him, just know this guy's the real deal. He's thinking about this stuff all the time, and it really is. It's more than just a pursuit or sort of, you know, throw an attempt to kind of funnel money towards a problem. He's really interested in applying design principles to these solutions and to make the world a better place. And it's very, very cool.
There's also Yeah, so there's some ones that I'm very curious to see from people I actually don't know. So there's a by Kyle Simpson. He's a speaker. He's got one called "Dude, Where's My UI Architecture?" And he talks about how, or I believe he's going to be talking about MVC, the Model View Controller framework, as a pattern for web application on the UI side, or he might be talking about how that's not the right thing for the UI side. So I'm very curious to hear what he's going on there, because I can tell you that getting MVC to work with the UI is not always the simplest things, and not the easiest thing to convince others about.
Right.
And it's similarly, there's one on front-end craftsmanship by Mark Meeker, just talking about figuring out best practices from what other people do with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. I'm very curious to see that. I'm always curious to take a look at people's JavaScript, because it's just one of those languages that's so funky and so kind of pieced together over these years that
it's
everybody
like the
has
English
their own
language,
way.
Isn't it? It's
it really
like,
is.
It's like it's one of those things where the English language is pretty much universally mocked for being inconsistent and having lots of arbitrary rules that we never stick to. And yet, I've heard so many people where English, so many artists with English as their second language, who, if they write poetry or they write songs, choose English because it's just got so much room for personal interpretation. That's exactly how I see JavaScript. It's this hobbled together mess that everyone seems to be able to have their own style. I'm not necessarily saying that's a good or bad thing, but it is very interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. And so I'm curious to see that. I'm also curious to see one of the things that I have not been able to find is how, especially at an enterprise level, people maintain CSS APIs. So CSS in and of itself is just a tough beast, mostly because of that whole cascading part. But I know at McAfee we have basically a, I won't say rough, but we have a CSS API that we believe that we can actually control. But I've been looking for examples, and I just, you know, I really haven't found any. Like, how do you have an internal and an external API when what you're looking at is CSS? So I'm hoping that if that's not covered, that there will be enough people there that are curious that I'll be able to possibly prompt some discussion and get some possible ideas.
Absolutely.
And then I think, beyond that, I know that, so I have no idea what he's going to talk about, so I know it's silly for me to even say it, but Merlin Mann is going to be there from 43folders.com,
right,
and
right.
I'm very curious to see, you know, what he has to say. I also find it funny that his closing keynote is sponsored specifically by a company, by Network Solutions, whom I don't have a fantastic relationship with, but I was just, I'm hoping that it's not sponsored by, as in he's going to talk about it, but I'm very curious to see what he has to say to, you know, a group of Portland web developers.
Right. Yeah. Merlin's my favorite MacBreak Weekly guest.
Yes.
And I know that I've referred a zillion people to his blog for his Inbox Zero and his Inbox Makeover articles and things of that nature. So anyone who's had the unfortunate experience of having me go through the whole rigmarole of my email setup might do well to see him explain it much more. Actually, he probably won't be talking about it at all, but maybe you can ambush him on the side and have him explain it more coherently.
That would be fun.
I'm sure speakers always love that when you walk up really enthusiastically and ask for professional advice in a hurried and frightening manner. It's their favorite thing in the world.
Yep, I bet they'll love it.
Yes, absolutely. So I've also got, this is related, but it's also kind of a plug. So I will not be at the Web Visions conference, but I will be at the Web Visionary Awards. I believe the conference, is it a Wednesday and a Thursday, or is it a Thursday and a Friday?
It's actually Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but Wednesday is all workshops. So if you didn't pay for the workshops, then no need to go.
Well, on Thursday, after you get all your Web Visions goodness during the bulk of the day and everything, why just go home? That's so boring. You're going to have stuff going on in your head, just hopping around, and you're going to want to be around fellow web heads and geeks and stuff like that. And that's when you hop on down to the Someday Lounge in Portland for the Web Visionary Awards. I went last year. Last year it was at the Baghdad, which is a cool place. Never been to the Someday Lounge, so give me a heads up if I need a warning of some sort or preparation for it. But it should be groovy, and so there's going to be food and drink and PowerPoint karaoke and the presentation of the awards. And the reason it's a plug is because my other Twitter mashup app. I say that because most people are familiar, most people I talk to are familiar with Poor Twitcher, but my other Twitter mashup is Tweet Plus, which is a much more purposeful tool. It's at tweetplus.com, and basically you put in your publicly accessible Twitter username, you wait for it to query the API and do its magic, and then it gives you a bunch of blogs that people you are following are maintaining. So if you ever, if you're like me, you'll follow someone on Twitter having never met them previously, just finding their tweets interesting. And I built the tool so I could basically look up, like, hey, so-and-so's tweets are really interesting. I wonder what deeper or longer, really, thoughts they have going on, more visual thoughts in some cases. And this is the tool to do it. And it's nominated in the mashup category this year, which is the one I was up for last year and lost to someone I now work with at Wagner Edstrom. So he is not nominated this year. It's Tim Sears. He did Twens and the iPhone app Robot Vision. And, he wished me good luck, and I said, yeah, my luck should be better since I'm not up against him this year, because he's a pretty brilliant developer. But yeah, so come down to the Web Visionary Awards on Thursday. If you see me, feel free to chat. I am not shy. And depending on your opinion of me as a host, you might want to come down to see Tweet Plus win or to root for it losing. It really depends on. But either way, you know, it'll be a satisfying experience. I encourage everyone to join us down there. There's some other really amazing websites nominated for the other categories. That makes it sound like I'm saying the other mashup nominees aren't good. But, you know, they're... it's like you know, if they're a New Hope and Return of the Jedi minus Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
So no, I'm just talking smack.
But, well, I'm sure it'll be exciting when the day comes.
I'm sure they're really good. But we do have to talk about, you know, we have a lot of fun on this show talking at Apple and Adobe and HTML5's expense. But it's time to get real. It's time to get serious for a second. There is something actually really sad. I'm not even, like, I'm sort of joking, but I'm sort of not. I mean, it's sad. It's gotten you sad too, hasn't it, Peter?
Oh, I'm quite distraught over this. Honestly, it's a day-to-day thing that I have not yet figured out how I'm going to deal.
Right. And we are, of course, talking about the oh-so-soon demise of our beloved Lala.com. And if you aren't familiar with Lala, well, there's really nothing you can do about it now. But basically, Lala was this awesome site. And actually, it's a really old web property that I guess the people who owned it were always trying to figure out what that spin on online music could be. It started out as something. I know that when I first saw it, it was a CD trading service, which just screams the future, swapping used CDs. And I remember seeing it and signing up and never doing anything for it. And then they did this really controversial thing where they kept that, but they somehow, in this odd Rube Goldberg machine of logic, decided that they'd also put unlimited streaming previews of the CDs you were swapping. Something like that, really bizarre. And then they fell off the face of the earth for a while and came back as the incarnation you and I know and love. You could still see artifacts of that CD swapping if you'd gotten the settings far enough or whatever. They still supported it, but it was clearly a secondary function. And what Lala sought to do is it had about the same MP3 catalog as Amazon Music Store. I think it was, I don't know if there's like a sort of cookie cutter service plan that these record labels sell if you're not iTunes, but it always seems like it's like eMusic has their plan, iTunes has their plan, and then everyone else, their catalog is nearly identical. But regardless, you had this great big catalog of MP3s. Almost anything you wanted, you could find on there. And it could be for you, like, if you wanted to use it just like iTunes or Amazon MP3, you basically could. You could just search for a song and download the thing and put it in your player. But what was beautiful about it were two key points, one being that it had the player interface built into the browser, so you could play whatever you had purchased right there in browser, which was great. And not only that, but you could then purchase web songs. So if you weren't sure you wanted to own an album and download the MP3s, you could buy for like 10 cents a song. It was like 90 cents an album.
Yeah.
You could just stream it unlimited through the player. And you could also upload your whole library from your hard drive, from your like iTunes library, to Lala in the server and stream it from the cloud. And it was really this amazing service, because what happened is you would get... if you invested in the time it would take you to like put your whole catalog up on there, all of a sudden you had this always accessible online, you know, gateway to your music. And not only that, but I remember I bought so much stuff through Lala because I was already listening right there, and I'd go like, oh geez, I really like The Fall, but I forgot that Wire had this awesome album, and I just searched for it right there in the player. It was such a seamless experience, and it really spoiled us and a lot of other users. I mean, you even wrote plugins for it, didn't you, Peter?
Yeah, it was my, if you search for Lala Control, you can still find it. It'll be up there on the Firefox add-on site until I pull it the day after Lala goes away, which saddens me much. It's my first and currently only Firefox add-on, so it's, overall, it'll be a sad day.
It was cool, too, is that Lala had, I think everyone is pretty much aware that iTunes recommendations engines are sort of really, I don't know a kind way to put it, but they've never, you're listening to Gang of Four. You would like Counting Crows. It's like, no, there's no way that's true, iTunes. But Lala, you could follow people, and then you could see what they were listening to. So I know that over the months, and it's probably been over a year since I've been using it regularly, I would log on, and on the front page you get like an activity stream sort of like Facebook, and mm-hmm. I'd see, oh look, Peter was listening to Depeche Mode today, maybe I should listen to Depeche Mode today, and it was very uh-huh. cool. But Lala was purchased by Apple, and at first that was kind of odd but then exciting, because we thought, oh cool, maybe the iPod and iTunes are going to get web streaming, and they still might, but unfortunately Apple decided to shut them down May 31st, and so and they're not announcing anything until I think at least a week after at WWDC. And even so, if they're shutting down the site, you know, regardless of whatever new option they introduce, we'll still have to, if it has Lala like functionality, we will still have to, if it exists at all, go through that process of re-adding music or doing whatever we need to do. So what was the idea? You wanted to have a moment of silence, right, Peter?
Yeah, I think, and as far as, you know, some moments of silence can get a little long. I think we're in a web world. I think the max we should take is 2 seconds, but just, these will be a focused 2 seconds on what was and what we'll always remember as Lala.com.
Absolutely. So, for those of you listening, tell your cubicle mates or the person you're sharing a car ride with or whatever to take a moment and join us in 2 seconds of silence to mourn the loss of our beloved Lala.com.
Well, there it was. I can tell you, I feel better. And,
I do. I feel closure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've really grown. I feel like I know you now a little better, and that's very special.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, I'm always going to remember this moment.
Absolutely. See, this is what we're about. It's not just a podcast. It's like a learn cast. It's a grow cast.
The grow cast. I love that.
We have grown as people now. But well, great. Well, this has been the second episode of Friends Electric. I'm still having fun. Are you still having fun, Peter?
I'm still having a good time. I think we're hopefully. I'm glad that we discussed HTML5, but I can definitely say that unless something large happens, we're going to be able to move on, and I think we've got lots of topics to discuss.
We may have a little bit of a delay next week unless we find like a guest host or something like that, but you may have to wait a little longer than a week for the next one, but we will be back. We're enjoying ourselves. It's a lot of fun, and we hope you, the listener, has had a lot of fun too. That was a really awkward sentence. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast, is what we're trying to say. And so we have a Ginchy website now that we didn't actually have when we recorded the last podcast. We recorded it first. It was kind of a leap before you look situation before we recorded the thing, and then we're like, oh, we should probably have some means of publishing this. So we have a site now.
And I think the point that you're really trying to make is that we followed the model that was presented by Jason Fried in Rework, the book Rework. We focused more on what we actually wanted to give to the users than, say, the experience. But even that, and I know you put a fair amount of work into it, and you know we got it done quickly. I think the site came out wonderfully. Just go to friendselectric.com, and you'll be forwarded to podcast.friendselectric.com and see the fantastic site. Simple, yet elegant and helpful.
Yes, very helpful. You can just go to podcast.friendselectric.com/give-me-an-awesome-SAT-score. It'll make you pizza. It doesn't do any of that. But what it does do is it gives you a heaping helpful of podcasts. And most importantly, there's a great comment form on there. So if you guys want to tell us, hey, why didn't you talk about such and such subject? Hey, why did you talk about this topic for so long? Hey, don't breathe into the microphone. Anything, really. We would love your feedback. We cherish it. We want to know that people are listening. Peter and I love talking to each other, but we could just as easily do it without the microphone. So we want to know what you guys want and what will make this an awesome experience for you. And we really, really appreciate you listening. And anything you'd like to add to that, Peter, before we give our farewells?
Just, we love everybody.
Yeah, we do. We love everybody. I should really say, we missing plug and icon everybody might be better. But if you don't get that joke, we may have to post an image in the show notes. I, as always, am Tyler Sticca. I am a senior experience designer at Wagner Edstrom Studio D, where we make lots of groovy websites and things. I'm also an instructor at the Art Institute. If you're a student there in your second year, or a level 200 student, as the folks might say, take my web standards class and come see the Web Visionary Awards this coming Thursday. I'm assuming this podcast will be out by this coming Thursday, or else this will be a horrifically outdated outro.
Indeed.
I think those are all the plugs I have. Peter, tell people what you're up to and where we can find you.
So again, Peter Woolley. I'm currently over at McAfee doing web development and UI development for their big platform for which you can manage all of your enterprise-level virus scan software. Other than that, I'm also an instructor over at the Art Institute of Portland. I'm currently teaching web scripting JavaScript, so if you happen to follow me on Twitter, my handle is just my full name, PeterWooLey. You might see things come up with the hashtag WDIM262. That's just stuff for my students as well as for everybody else. Next term, if you happen to be there, I'll actually be teaching advanced scripting, which is the last and kind of Ajax-driven web applications class. Very exciting, and if you want to come, I hope that you will.
Great. Well, thanks so much, everyone, for listening. The address again is friendselectric.com, which will redirect you to podcast.friendselectric.com. I'm Tyler, that's Peter, and we'll see you next time.